Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Elections, elections, elections. The election in Paraguay, and now elections in Venezuela. The gathering, however, of a meeting in Bogota to discuss Venezuela also includes the opposition in absence. The opposition was led by a man named Juan Guaido, who was backed by the U.S. for a time. No longer, I understand, although it can get ambiguous. Now we have news from Bogota. Former Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido, who opposed Maduro in Venezuela, arrived in Miami after following a surprise visit to Colombia. And then we go to Colombia, where we learn that Gustavo Petro, who's opened diplomatic relations with Venezuela, neighbor Venezuela, held a summit meant to reinvigorate talks between the Venezuelan government of Maduro and opposition political parties. Chiefly, that would be Guaido's opposition, although he no longer, I think, leads it. 19 countries and the European Union attended, and the conversation was significant. Professor, to unpack all this, if I understand it, Guaido was the leader of the opposition in Venezuela, supported by the Biden and by the Trump administration. That is no longer the case. Under the Biden administration, Guaido has stepped aside for new leadership that I believe remains in Spain. Guaido visiting Bogota during this summit, a summit organized by Gustavo Petro, the left-of-center new president of Colombia, a significant ally of the United States. Mr. Petro was recently in Washington meeting with the president. Okay, my Venn diagram is broken. Help me, Professor. What does all this mean?
Absolutely, John. Well, first of all, it means that there's very little possibility of a return of democracy in Venezuela anytime soon. In many ways, it's a testimony of the failed strategy of trying to appease dictators. But more broadly, the background that you alluded to, as you had the consolidation of power and the destruction of democracy since Hugo Chavez came to power in 1999, what you had was also a Venezuelan opposition that has always been somewhat divided. But as you had the consolidation of power after Hugo Chavez's death with his replacement, Nicolas Maduro, the opposition tried to pull itself together into a united front. And then when you had what was really a sham election with Maduro, what happened was that Juan Guaido, who was elected essentially the leader of the Congress, the congressional opposition, under the Venezuelan constitution, if there is not a proper legitimate election, then whoever is the head of the Congress becomes the de facto president. And so what happened was that the Venezuelan opposition said, and the U.S. backed this back in 2019, given that there was not a legitimate election in terms of what happened with Maduro in Venezuela, Guaido is the de jure president of the country. The problem was that Maduro stayed with his Cuban advisors and the kleptocrats who had, for years robbed money in Venezuela. And so they didn't go away. And so although Guaido was the de jure president, Maduro, and with the backing of the Cubans and in the army and others, basically stayed in power and continued their criminal activities. Despite really valid efforts by the United States, by the European communities, 60 other nations that recognized Guaido, years went by, and essentially the opposition became even more frustrated, became even more divided. Madurismo began to basically buy off some of the opposition, and so little by little that de jure government fell apart. And so really what just happened was the last blow, which was that after the end basically of Guaido's term in Congress, essentially the opposition said, okay, you are no longer our leader, and thus you are no longer the de jure president. And so Guaido went from being the de jure but not de facto president to essentially being a bit of an unrecognized person. Now, given that the Biden administration has been trying to work with Maduro to get prisoner releases and trying to get more oil out of Venezuela, although it says that it's really not, the complication now is that, and also Petro, who is a former the head of Colombia, who is a former M19 Marxist guerrilla, who is somewhat sympathetic to Maduro, and Petro wants to be kind of the broker of a return to democracy in Venezuela, and so you have this big democracy summit taking place in Colombia to try to get talks restarted between Maduro and at least a small fragment of what used to be the opposition, which is no longer headed by Guaido. And so sadly, and it's really a testament of how far things have fallen with the opposition, Guaido, who is no longer officially the head of the opposition, basically smuggled himself into Colombia, wanted to be part of those talks. And it was an inconvenience for the Colombian government. So they said, hey, we're putting you on a plane. Where do you want to go? To the United States. And so sadly, Guaido was not only not allowed by the Venezuelans to participate, but was not allowed by the Colombian government to participate, and was basically booted out of the country to the United States. And so, again, it's a bit of a testament, not only how Maduro has consolidated power, how Colombia wants to position itself to restart the democracy, but also just how far, sadly, Guaido, who for me is a very valiant person who's played a very, weak hand in a very admirable way, just how far he's fallen, but continues that struggle, not unlike what Cuban Americans are doing, and the continuing struggle against, that authoritarian regime in Cuba as well.
We come to this from Reuters. The Biden administration looking to turn the page. I understand. You have relations with your foes as well as your allies. The Biden administration has no desire, writes Reuters, to maintain sanctions into perpetuity, according to Deputy National Security Advisor John Finer, reiterating it would take concrete steps toward elections for them to be lifted. All right, concrete steps. There was an election in Venezuela. My memory is it was 22, maybe it was 21. It was disappointing to everyone because the administration, the regime, was endorsed unanimously or near to unanimously. The opposition gained no foothold. So this election holding in Venezuela, is that enough to put the stamp on Maduro as acceptable again back into the international relations?
Well, part of the problem, John, is that the authoritarianism of Maduro and his criminal activities are a bit of a discomfort and an embarrassment for the Latin American left. They want to kind of look the other way and bring him back into the fold. We've seen that with Petro. We've seen that with Lula. We've seen that with a variety of other leaders. We've seen that with Alberto Fernandez in Argentina, kind of wanting to close their eyes and say, hey, everyone gets to play at the table. No, nobody is excluded. But the real change, you had a very strict sanctions regime, obviously under President Trump's administration, especially 2019, 2020, when those sanctions were really strengthened. Now, what has happened under the Biden administration is an attempt to try to loosen sanctions, to get negotiations. And Maduro is really, from a position of power, kind of played us. He said, okay, well, if you just leave up on this, if you just ease up on this, maybe I'll think to come back to the negotiating table. And so the U.S. had eased a number of restrictions, letting Chevron and also European companies, Repsol and Eni, pump a little bit of oil out of the country. We also released some people in some Venezuelan kleptocrats from jail to get a handful of U.S. Hostages, prisoners released. But unfortunately, what's happened is that so far we've made a number of small concessions and really allowed the Venezuelan opposition, as I just noted, to be essentially dissolved. And Maduro has actually become stronger. He has shown no serious indication of coming back to the table. And indeed, what Maduro has actually said, almost joking, almost making fun of the U.S. and illustrating his power, saying, well, I'm not coming back to the table at all unless you put $3 billion that you promised into my bank account that you previously suspended, and unless you return Tariq William Saab, who is again, one of the key criminals in the regime, take him out of jail and drop charges against others and allow Venezuela to get back into the international human rights organization. So in many ways, it shows Maduro is from a position of strength. And frankly, the U.S. wants democracy, it wants peace, but thus far, the concessions that it's had have only strengthened Maduro and caused Maduro to up his game even more. So I think what you're seeing from NSC Advisor Finer is the frustration the Biden administration saying, okay, we want to go down this path, but we're not going to go farther down this path unless you actually do concrete and serious moves. And so I think that continues to be an open game, you know, how that's played, but we're certainly not seeing any indication of goodwill on the Maduro side.
We've focused on Caracas and Bogota, the two capitals, and Petro looking for a remedy in some fashion, a mitigation of the standoff between the U.S. and Caracas. However, at the same time, we have to mention that you don't get Venezuela when you turn to better relations or at least open relations. This headline from Houston, Mexico City, and Havana tells the story. Cuba increasingly is turning to Russia and Mexico for oil to ease an acute shortage of diesel and gasoline and supplement dwindling supplies of Venezuela crude and fuel. Venezuela, for more than two decades, has been Cuba's main political ally and largest provider. And it goes on to say that, but the South American nation's struggle to produce enough fuel for its own people have left it unable to fulfill its feed to Cuba. So in this story of people having energy, and I certainly don't, no one wants the Cuban people to be the victims of this, we're looking at states way beyond the borders of Venezuela and Colombia. We stop in Havana, where their bad actors gather, and we go to Moscow. Then we mention Tehran. The IRGC is not absent from this measurement. And we have to take into account China investing heavily in many nations, including Venezuela. So what you get with making peace with Maduro is a library of troublemakers. Correct, Professor?
Exactly. What you have is a number of states who, by virtue of becoming authoritarian populist states with the financial backing of China and the diplomatic and security and other forms of backing from states like Russia and Iran, is a series of actors which I would call threat hosts, who are, you know, willing basically to allow U.S. Geopolitical rivals into the hemisphere in worrisome ways. And so in the case of Venezuela, what you saw is, again, it wasn't just about the Chinese money. The Chinese tended to move a little bit cautiously, but they've certainly done the most to prop up Venezuela. But you had the Russians, which put a lot of money in the oil sector before, as well as doing a lot of for Venezuela's military and especially its air defense sector, as well as training and other things. You had the Iranians, which paid by Venezuelan gold have helped to revitalize a little bit the Venezuelan petroleum sector, although it's still really kind of limping along. And of course, you have other bad actors, Nicaragua and Cuba that we've talked about before. But also kind of tying some of these pieces together, because there's many interrelationships. So as you alluded to, after Cuba in the Cold War lost its ability to get oil and other things from Russia, Venezuela became its new savior. But as Venezuelan oil production declined, it became increasingly difficult for Cuba to get its oil from Venezuela. It's still getting some, but at the same time, because Russia, over its invasion of Ukraine, has been internationally sanctioned, Russia has a lot of spare oil on the market that it's looking to offload from people who, you know, maybe could pay for it. And so its old friend Cuba actually is one of those countries that Russia can send its oil to. There's also an indirect connection because, for example, through India, Russia used to actually take a lot of Venezuelan oil and actually refine it in India, who has some of the unique international capabilities to refine Venezuela's high sulfur heavy oil. And then the question is, what happens to that oil? And so you have a lot of different connections between actors, but certainly the threat actors like Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba are a strategic problem for the United States, not just as a matter of democracy and the suffering of their people, but because they open the doors to a range of other actors who, you know, certainly do not have goodwill towards the United States and are looking for hosts of the activities to position themselves in the region.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. Elections. There's one more election of significance to speak. the Argentina election, because recent news is the present president of Argentina, Mr. Fernandez, Alberto Fernandez, has withdrawn from the contest. When we come back, it seems the major candidate in Argentina is inflation. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.